The CDC now recommends the use of face coverings in addition to maintaining 6 feet of social distancing. These recommendations can help prevent the spread of COVID-19 by people who have the virus but don't have symptoms. Essential working staff members are encouraged to wear cloth face coverings in the public where other social distancing measures are difficult. Maintaining at least 6 feet of social distancing remains important to slowing the spread of COVID-19. The cloth face coverings are not surgical masks or N95 respirators. Those are critical supplies that must continue to be reserved for healthcare workers and first responders. For more information on how to safely wear and care for face coverings and masks, go to cdc.gov/coronavirus. That's cdc.gov/coronavirus. Remember, the best way to prevent the spread of COVID-19 is to wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. If soap and water are not readily available, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol. Keep your distance from others of at least 6 feet. Cover your mouth and nose with a cloth face cover when around others. Cover coughs and sneezes with your sleeve, not your hands. Clean and disinfect the spaces around you. This has been a public service announcement from Stony Brook University and WUSB-FM.
And you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook, where the time is just about 6 o'clock. That means it's time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
I'm here.
And we're surviving another week of isolation, of being shut in, being kept away from other people. How you doing? How you holding out?
I'm fine.
A little stir crazy yet, or everything all right?
For the most part,
good. Good to hear.
Little down. My radish experiment is not resulting in things I'd like. I've had a bit of a dying off of some of my seedlings, but it's discouraging. Gardening's hard. I gotta say, I was out walking around, and spring is definitely around.
Spring is around.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a sunchoke mystery. Because we planted sunchokes. There's a Jerusalem artichokes, right? That's the name. They're not artichokes. They're not from Jerusalem, so we call them sunchokes. And they're sunflower-like plants, but they also have a harvest in the wintertime. The roots are I don't know what they're like. I've never actually had them, but since I'm so bad at gardening, this plant seemed perfect for me because it makes big flowers and it's so easy to grow. It'll almost grow anywhere. And once you plant it, you'll never get rid of it. Everyone always says that. So I figure, yeah, this is it. I plant this once, and I can just sit back and relax. So what happened was, you know, we waited all winter. All winter came and went. We didn't expect to see anything come up. We had one in the house in a pot. And I was curious, like, why would this not come up in the house in the wintertime? Because it's warm. How does it know it's not spring? Anyway, it didn't come up in the house. The ones outside didn't come up. But then in April, we saw little sprouts. Little sprouts started coming up everywhere that we planted them, which is great, except not the one in the house. That one, for some reason, didn't come up. So we figured those are the sunchokes because they're coming up everywhere that we planted them. Except now, this week, we discovered another plant really shooting up quickly in neighboring spots along the same row that we planted them. And now the thought is that those are the sunchokes. And in fact, something is now starting to come up in the pot.
Yeah, the one in the pot I repotted in that peat moss, and it's a little airier, retains water, and it's a little acidic.
But so you might not have had to do that. It might have come up on its own anyway, because everything seems to have been timed to come up in May.
It was in a larger container. That does affect it, but I'm not going to take all the credit. It's certainly this timing of April showers.
Well, okay, but now it's May, and my question is, if these are the sunchokes, what are those other plants? Because they came up in the spots that we planted the sunchokes. So now we have a mystery.
It could be a symbiotic plant or some other form of it.
A symbiotic plant.
Yeah, something that coexists, that, or just straight.
I'm intrigued. I'm really intrigued by this.
One row, admittedly, didn't really have that many of
them. Okay, it had one.
The new ones,
yeah.
They're consistent. I counted. There's five in each row, and that sounds like a very organized 15 plants. That's a lot.
Yeah, because we would have organized it well like that. Five times three is 15. And we had three rows, five each. That makes sense. That sounds like us.
We're going. We want to big batch of them, so, and we want to see how fast it overtakes this area that was otherwise not using very much down there. So
the odd thing is the other plants, the mystery plants that came up in April that are still growing, you don't see them anywhere else. We have a fenced in area, and they're only there, as is the other one.
It's a mystery. We'll identify it. We've taken some photos.
How are we going to identify it? I don't know how we can possibly do that.
The leaf patterns, the way they grow,
is there
something
a plant
like
Google or something?
It's yeah, reverse image horticultural version.
Okay.
I think our skills with gardening are going to improve. I think a lot of people are going to get better at things like cooking and gardening and mending. I've been making a lot more masks that suddenly seem to be something people really desire.
They're in demand now. People are desiring them from you. In fact, they're asking specifically, Kyle, can you make me a mask? Because this other person has a mask and they're getting really good ratings for it somehow. And now they want one for themselves. And
I have great fabric I was using for some other stuff, for mending and lab coats and other kinds of PPE. So this was sort of made for me. And I have like some nice hemp blends and really tough thread. I have thread made out of Kevlar, actually.
You made me one that's tie-dye out of an old shirt, right?
Yeah. I found this great tie-dye work shirt or dress button-up shirt and just didn't want to destroy the whole shirt. So I cut the sleeves off and made a couple of masks. I can make both kinds too, the pleated as well as now the sort of pocket mask that people like, which is a little easier to put on and it's faster to make. There's less pieces. So that's one thing. And I think my soldering is going to improve too, because just throw that in the mix of all the sorts of hackerspace skills that are now, I'm thinking, quite valuable to have learned and to taken an interest in these intrepid times.
Yeah, intrepid times. Yeah, they it certainly is good to have these skills, to have lots of skills, and also just to have patience and just the ability to find good in places where you might not have found it before.
Well, seeing new growth.
Ways of keeping entertained, whether it's gardening, whether it's reading, whether it's, you know, binge watching things or what. I don't binge watch, but I do like to see things, but I like to take time to see them.
Consume media texts?
I don't like the word consume either, but just appreciate. Yeah, appreciate artwork. Let's say it that way.
Okay.
All right. That way, watching The Bachelor doesn't seem so bad. No, I don't watch crap like that. Oh, my God.
Critical analysis.
But I won't judge people. I won't judge people who do.
Well, with
some exceptions. I will judge some people, but not everybody.
Well, everybody has some sort of like entertainment.
You need to earn it to be judged by me.
When they're not working on things. No, and that is well earned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad we covered all that. So, improving skills, but that's not all that's going on.
Oh, no, there's certainly a lot of things going on, but I like to sort of stick to what we're doing a little more because it's more, well, it's less depressing.
Well, I know the material. I know the material very well.
Uh-huh.
I'm all my research.
Yeah, well, we did we always do a rehearsal show first.
Right.
In case people don't know how radio works. Mm-hmm. You do the whole thing and then, you know, you make notes, you get the lines right. This was a weird bit, this part here that I'm currently doing, because we rehearsed that as well. And it was very different the first time we went through this. But based on audience research and 18 to 34s, we modified it a little bit to include this explanation.
It's an algorithm, but yeah.
Everything's an algorithm, Kyle.
Duh.
You're an algorithm. Yeah. We went to a supermarket. We went to a supermarket last week. We went to the same supermarket that we went to that we described on the air, where only one other person was in it, and we were both aware, all of us were aware of where we were in the store. This was different because for some reason, a lot more people were in the supermarket this time. We went at the same time of day, a half hour before it closed.
It felt like it was back to normal hours and we were with that earlier hour crowd, right? On a normal day.
Yeah, I did not feel comfortable going inside when I saw how many people were in there.
I kind of regret having done it, actually.
I think we
could have held out, but...
Well, I'm going to say I felt uncomfortable going in. I don't regret it now because I didn't feel uncomfortable after doing it. And the reason for that is because every single person in the place was wearing a mask.
True.
And they all were keeping distance, being respectful, not being idiots. And that's all I need. If people are taking precautions, the basic precautions, and respecting what is going on and taking care of each other, that's the best we can hope for. So I felt good about that, and we didn't have any bad experiences.
There's a huge variety of face coverings, but there were all individuals wearing them had something adequate.
Uh-huh.
So it was encouraging, but yeah, a huge variety, but it doesn't matter what type. I mean, it has to just be something that is a barrier when you're in those spaces that you just cannot possibly keep any kind of distance.
Right,
but
right.
It was packed. It was. Really
I wouldn't
busy.
Say packed, but crowded. We didn't bump into anybody, but there were no. Near collisions and people backed off and everybody, you know, we were all looking out for ourselves.
Actually, in the produce area, I got barreled down by like a shopping cart, and the person just would not stop.
Wow,
they just kept coming at me with a shopping cart, and like I was getting ready to select something, and I had already been bounced around for some other produce.
It's
I
think every person for themselves.
I got bounced from onions because someone was already at the onions, so I went over to like apples, and then someone came like charging at me with this cart and their significant something. And
oh, you might have gotten the last apple.
Some family, I don't know. They weren't even going to the apples. They just wanted to go right down the lane that I was just. Approaching. So I felt a little bit threatened.
But they
that.
Were wearing a mask.
I think.
No,
I
everybody was wearing a mask.
I didn't see the license plate.
Okay, but everybody was wearing a mask in that store.
Most everybody,
I think that is important.
It might have been disposable.
Because if you are sick and you're wearing a mask and you know, you might not know you're sick, you cough, you sneeze, that is how it gets out into the air. If you're wearing a mask, that won't happen. Now, the mask won't prevent you from breathing things in. It does, you know, the virus is different than what carries the virus when you cough, the phlegm, whatever it is that goes out into the air. There are still risks. Of course, there are still risks. Nothing is 100%, but these are the best precautions we can take. And I think they're totally reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. I was more noticing the unwillingness to relent, but surely, yeah, every sneeze is like 2 million virus particles. I heard that fact somewhere this week.
Well, I heard that it basically, if you're inside a place that's fairly small, like a restaurant or something, and they have circulating air, the virus can go through that circulating air. So it's not just a 6-foot thing anymore. If somebody's sick, it goes through the circulation and it can go throughout the entire place. So we need to have a good handle on things before we start waltzing back into the places that we want to go to. You know, it's not an attack on your freedom by anybody. It's an unfortunate situation that we all have to deal with. You know, nobody, well, of course, there are conspiracy theorists who think somebody is behind this, but these things happen in nature. Let's assume this is one of them. And you just have to, if you assume you want to survive, you have to follow certain guidelines. And that's all that's going on right now. You can try and point fingers and say your freedom is being infringed upon, but you're just being a dumbass because the virus doesn't care. It doesn't have any politics. It's going to pretty much mow down whoever it can. And look at us. We're well over 80,000 dead now in this country. And that's disgusting when you consider that we have, is it over 25% of all of the deaths in the world? And
there's been an uptick in Russia, apparently. But
yeah, I want to talk about Russia. But you know, considering we have less than 5% of the population and over 25%, I know, you know, we strive to be number one, but for God's sake, not this.
Yeah.
Russia, yeah, you know, we were talking about this a few weeks ago, how Russia had virtually no cases. What were they doing right? Well, whatever it was they were doing right, they stopped doing it because now they're number two to us. How about that? I know that's part of a little arms race we've always had going, but wow, this thing can change in a couple of heartbeats. Really, it's that insane. And you saw Dr. Fauci this morning?
I saw some of the stuff afternoon. I didn't, and I caught a little bit of the first part. I haven't really gone through it, so I didn't miss any of the anything that may have been noteworthy.
Yeah, I'm sorry for forgetting to record it, but it's not your fault. C-SPAN 3 repeated it, so it's all there.
Yeah,
so
I think it's going to be re-aired at 9 tonight.
If you need
to
leave the show to watch the hearing,
no,
I understand.
No, I'll participate. I mean, I kind of know his demeanor and what he was saying. I saw him in his office, and I don't know. Was there something that stood out to you?
Do you know what Rand Paul said? Did you hear about this?
Do I ever know what Rand Paul said? Yeah, lay it on me.
This
I don't know.
Guy is a Class A certified ass. There's just no other word for it. Well, there are plenty of other words, but I'm happy with ass because that is what he is. First class. First, all the way. This guy got the virus. He saw firsthand how this can completely knock you down, and he survived it. I'm glad he survived it. I'm glad anybody survives it. But unlike Boris Johnson, he didn't learn a thing from it. He still thinks it's perfectly okay to just live your normal life and infect anybody that's around you. No, that's not right. But he got into it with Fauci. He challenged him on the pandemic. Okay, here's what he said. Shouldn't we at least be discussing what the mortality of children is? Now, keep in mind, we're discovering now that children are far more susceptible to COVID-19 than we thought in the past. In New York, kids are dying from this. That's a big deal. That's a damn big deal. He noted that the mortality rate of coronavirus patients aged 0 to 18 approaches zero in New York, where 12 children have died. 12 children have died to Rand Paul, that is approaching zero. Sure, it's not 1,000 people, but those are 12 kids. that shouldn't have died. And we need to know why, and we need to know how to prevent that. And if you start opening up schools without knowing this, what are you doing? He says the notion of not sending students back to school in the fall is really ridiculous. Really, Rand? Rand. I can't get used to that name. The coldness, the callousness of people like him, people like Chris Christie, people like Trump, it's so hard to wrap my head around that. And yet we have to do that day after day after day. And I get sick of it because I'm tired of always recoiling in horror and saying, I can't believe he said this, while tens of thousands of people are dying as a direct result. And it is a direct result. If we had had our act together like other countries did, the death toll would have been a fraction of what it is now. That is indisputable. I would say that if it was my favorite person in office as president, if they mess something up to this degree. There is a very definite cause and effect. If you don't do testing, if you're not on top of something at the beginning, and if you had knowledge of it well in advance, you are responsible. And all of this feigned indignation at the economy being shut down and our lives being disrupted, that's just to divert attention away from what you're guilty of. That's changing the conversation. And the conversation is not about the economy right now. The conversation is about our lives, our children's lives, our future. We cannot let that be a distraction. Now, every time I turn on one of the news channels and I see in big numbers the death toll, I know that is upsetting Trump to death. It really is bugging the hell out of him because he doesn't want the conversation to be about that. Kyle, you saw something where the prediction now is that they're going to try and dispute that that's even the number, that that number is completely wrong.
Yeah, there was a couple things that people had noted or theorized about. I think it was on Twitter or social media of just casually looking. I was checking out this attitude that they're kind of honing in hopes of being in campaign and election mode, but basically to dispute the numbers. I think Dr. Birx was quoted secondhand, so I don't know where who the individual that heard it was exactly, but basically that they can't trust what's coming out of the CDC numbers-wise. And I don't know how out of context that was taken, but or if she directly meant it, but off the record. But that's a bad situation because we're trusting the CDC to give us good information about that, especially after the fact, when underreporting is something that we're suspecting. And a lot of the classifications of the deaths as theorized, what is it?
Projected?
Yeah, a probable COVID-19 case, I believe is how they describe it. Something like that. But anyway, those sorts of tricky things with language will play into Trump's hand. And their solution seems to be to get more to sort of juice the economy with more consumption, like forcing different regulations so that people have to upgrade heavy equipment or otherwise prop up industries, much like what he tried to do with coal and so on and so forth.
You know, when you mentioned this to me yesterday, I said, Kyle, there's no way that he can just deny that the death toll is what it is. He can't argue with numbers. And I realized, no, wait a minute. That's what dictators have done since the beginning of time. Is refute the statistics, refute the facts, say that these people didn't disappear, they weren't massacred, they didn't get killed in various ways or just...
He's also been moving them up progressively.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of clips in some of the shows, the evening shows, people doing like a mashup of him talking about 50,000 and 60,000 and 70 and 80 and 90. Now we're, we're looking at really... eye bleeding heights.
So I guess
they changed the projection.
Two different tactics then, yeah. Because he could be denying that there are this many deaths, or he could be saying, yeah, 250,000. Oh, we only lost 200,000. Hey, we saved 50,000, you know, things like that. Or saying 3,000 a day, that's what we're looking at to see if people are willing to go outside and go back to work and lose 3,000 people a day. If that works, then okay, let's go that route.
Yeah, and there's been really good modeling around what that looks like. And the projection is grim. That was some of the news this last week.
I don't know which it is, but either one of them is terrible, and it's not the right way to go. Absolutely not. The right way to go is to listen to the people that understand what they're talking about, the scientists, which is what Rand Paul today was not doing. He said to reporters, people are hurting and we're destroying our country. We've got to open up business. We got to let people vote. We're not going to live in a perfect world without infectious disease. We're still going to have it, but we got to open the economy. And that's the number one message I have. The number one message, the economy above health. Now, you know, nobody is saying that we can only go outside if it's 100% absolutely safe for anything and everybody. And that's how it's being painted. That is not the case. This is a pandemic. We have not seen something like this in a century. That is a fact. And to say that, the economy is hurting, that's more important than putting people's lives at risk. Ask yourself, would you rather have 200,000 more people die and have your job be available starting tomorrow? Is that worth it to you? Or maybe wait a couple of more months, whatever it takes, and these people are saved. Now, I know that is painful. That's going to hurt. We'll talk about that as well, how we can remedy that. But I just think it's cold and callous to say the economy is the number one priority. The health of our people should be.
Yeah, and I looked at the, I said last week, but it's that the essential workers themselves would be put at risk if we had to a second wave of it as a result of that reopening thing. And Dr. Fauci, I think, directly stated really a long time ago on the task force, you know, conference meetings about it, and basically saying that this second wave itself would make it really, really difficult to reopen anything again, because you'd have resistance. And so it seems like the administration is going right to people's resistance before we've even had a callback. Like, do you think people will protest if there is an increase in numbers and people are asked to go back on self-quarantine? Because that's exactly the same. Those protests we saw in Comac.
That would never happen in Corum.
No. They're basically the same styling. Like, okay, if we had to go back on self-quarantine, only essential people out, only essential trips, you'd have people doing that, you think? I mean, because we basically leapfrog that. Well, we're still on the reopening.
I think for that to happen, you'd have to see a spike, and that might scare people. But that might wake them up.
And with the way things are going, will we not see a spike? I mean, that's
we will see a spike.
Inevitable, yeah.
In all likelihood.
So if people aren't listening now, my point is, when we need them to listen again to try to bring it down again, are we still going to have economic arguments? Because that's going to have shown to have not worked.
Here's the thing, though. You know, we say there's going to be a spike. There might not be a spike. And the reason for that is because of the precautions we're taking now. We've seen certain states where it hasn't gone up as much as we expected it to. It doesn't mean it can't still happen, especially if people let down their guard entirely. But we've also seen in other parts of the world, like New Zealand, it can be contained if you do it right, if people take the precautions. What I think most people are afraid of is people not taking those precautions, because we see how quickly, look at Russia, look how fast things can change. And the virus is no less deadly than it was at the very beginning. So if you look back 100 years at the 1918 flu pandemic, you see the second wave is what really wiped people out. The first wave was bad. The second wave was horrendous. And with the knowledge we have now, with the science that's at our fingertips, it's a crime not to take it seriously. Now, let's get back to Rand Paul. I don't want to focus on him too much, but this really, it begs discussion here. Now, Rand Paul is an ophthalmologist. That's a doctor that specializes in eyes, Okay, it's got nothing to do with contagious diseases.
There's a distinction, though. There's optometrists, which are eyeglasses.
That's different. That's the guy you go to with and get a glasses prescribed. Yeah. A real doctor. Yeah, but there are real doctors that don't understand other parts of medicine. Medicine is just, it's not just one subject.
Yeah,
it is a huge, huge collection of different things that have all sorts of strengths and you can specialize in one thing and not know a damn thing about something else.
Yeah, like a dentist isn't necessarily going to know about pathology, exactly. Or you wouldn't want them working on your heart valve.
A good example, a brain surgeon is not going to know anything about dentistry. How about that?
Or podiatry.
Exactly. All right, so anyway, apparently it's gone to his head. He thinks that he knows everything, he doesn't. The history of this, he says, when we look back, will be of wrong prediction after wrong prediction after wrong prediction. No, Rand Paul, it's not wrong prediction. It's learning as we go along. Things change. Yeah, we didn't have to wear masks at first. Now we realize it's a good idea to do that because we're learning more as we go along. That is the nature of science, is learning from experience and from experimentation. He then targeted Fauci personally. As much as I respect you, Dr. Fauci, I don't think you're the end all. I don't think you're the one person that gets to make the decision. We can listen to your advice, but there are people on the other side saying there won't be a surge and we can safely open the economy. Who are those people on the other side, Rand Paul? Who are they exactly? Are they people specializing in infectious diseases? Or are they just people that are in your election district? People that have absolutely no knowledge in that particular field, like you. I think that's who the other side is. And we don't always have to give equal time to the other side just because they disagree. They don't have the same amount of knowledge and expertise.
And not when you can unknowingly put people in life, in their lives in jeopardy, like with no ill intent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best intentions. Oh, yes, your lemonade stand must be open. Well, I got news for you. You could have this fall-on effect of really, really hurting people.
Absolutely. Let me read what Fauci said in response, and then we'll move on. I never made myself out to be the end-all. I'm a scientist, a physician, and a public health official. I give advice according to the best scientific evidence. He said other people have advised the U.S. of the need to get the country back open again economically. I don't give advice about economic things. I don't give advice about anything other than public health. Yeah, that is it. Give advice on the things you know something about, not the things you don't. He then turned Rand Paul's own phrasing on him. You use the word we should be humble about what we don't know. I think that falls under the fact that we don't know everything about this virus, and we really had better be very careful, particularly when it comes to children. Yeah, amen to that. Amen to that. I'm impressed by the fact that people listen to Fauci. They could say, oh, he's a Trump appointee. He's part of that administration. We should condemn him along with everybody else. No, the guy knows what he's talking about. You can tell.
He has credibility, and that's a powerful thing.
That's what matters. That's what shows this isn't about politics, and we need to move away from that as quickly as possible. Now, the issue of how this is hurting us economically, yeah, it's hurting everybody. It's hurting you. It's hurting me. It's hurting everybody we know in one way or another.
Oh, don't get me thinking about that.
Yeah, really? Well, the thing is, it's hurting everybody. That is, to me, the one thing that makes me a little bit more sane is knowing that we're going through this with everybody else. And for that reason, nobody should have to suffer unduly as a result. Nobody should be losing their home. Nobody should be losing their business. Nobody should be losing anything if we're on pause. Now, let's look at somebody who has to pay rent. Okay, if you don't have to pay the rent, that is a huge burden off your back that you don't have to worry about. What happens to the landlord? Landlord's got to pay the mortgage. Okay, put a pause on that as well. Landlord doesn't have to pay the mortgage now. You know, it keeps going up and up until basically you're where the banks are, and we know the banks can just chill for a little while.
That's the thing that gets me the most upset, because anything but that means someone is making money. They're capitalizing off of other people's plight.
Yeah, nobody should be doing that.
Ruinous mm-hmm. plight. That is unforgivable in my perspective.
But it's being encouraged.
Ugh.
So to all those people that are upset that they're losing their livelihood, I hear you. I feel you, but this is something that supersedes all of that. And if we if if we make it so that you are not suffering any more than just being in a holding pattern, then I think we can all get through this together. But that's not how our system is set up, and that needs to change. That's what you should be angry about, is the fact that people are being put out on the street and are feeling the effects much more than other people are. If this takes 6 months to get through, in 6 months we should all be in the same place that we were when it started. Not owing any more, not having our savings drained, none of that. We should all be on pause together. And that's what governments are for, to take care of people when things like this happen. It's happening in other places. You know, other countries seem to get this. They seem to know what it takes to take care of people. For instance, in the United Kingdom, they have extended their coronavirus furlough payments to workers through the end of October. Yeah, they're extending a worker furlough program that pays people idled by the COVID-19 pandemic up to about $3,088 a month. And that program is now going to run through the end of October. They're doubling the original four-month timeline to support workers when the economy starts to emerge from a crippling shutdown. As we reopen the economy, we will need to support people back to work, they say. And that's what you do. That's how you take care of people. What did we get? A $1,200 check? That's it? That's all we get? Just one?
I burned through most of that, I think. I think everybody
has. Yeah, you bought gardening supplies.
It's like long since gone. Yeah, hey, I stimulate the economy by buying peat. And, yeah.
Well, there is plenty of money. I think that's a fact that we need to establish and emphasize. There is plenty of money. Just look at the military budget, okay? We can allocate things in all different directions, but the first thing is to take care of people. That's what it's all about.
It's put the brakes on a lot of annoying things, though. Like just going to the hardware store. I talked about that a couple of weeks ago. I went to like a garden center not even inside the building, and it was crazy and excessively long lines.
Yeah, Lowe's. We went and it was just too many people, and they weren't wearing masks.
If I wanted to go to another like smaller place, I'd still be in confined spaces. And the fact that I even have to make that calculation means I'm not going and buying lumber, or I'm not building, I'm not creating things, and
you can have it delivered,
affecting other projects. But I can only imagine what other critical stuff is being put on hold and how difficult it is just making the calculation. Like, do I risk my life to get some fasteners or whatever you have to do? And, it's a lot of jumping through hoops. And as I said, yeah, it's just that any kind of discretionary spending has definitely been put to a halt. I think everybody is looking at their bills and they're thinking very cautiously because they realize that check, that was it. And now they want everybody to go back to work.
Yeah, of course people are upset because you're not giving them enough. You need to take care of people. Now, if you were getting the equivalent of your salary, maybe a little less, would you be as upset? Yeah, you'd be stir crazy a little bit for not being able to go outside, but you know what? You can go outside. As long as you take precautions, you can do that.
You know, if they had contained it, I'd be willing to go back to work, but they didn't do that.
Right, right. And they're not showing any signs of doing it now.
They were denying it then. Now they're denying the numbers. It's not trustworthy. As I said at the beginning of this, it looks like we're going to be on our own for a while, and it feels like that. I mean, there is good leadership. There's good people out there. There's suggestions like you've made, but people will be wary. And even with the reopening I was talking about earlier, people will be leery about entering those spaces. Like I was, you know, remarking about a trip to the simple things, you know, supplies,
right.
Building, you know, getting moving again as far as all the different things that people do, maintaining homes, to say nothing of like real estate and production and factories and so forth. If they become vectors for making people ill, I mean, you already have a lot of healthcare workers and essential workers who are out of commission because they weeks ago responded to this. So we need to not create that wave when it's very clear the proximity, how much that proximity and hastiness can jeopardize people. And so quickly, that's the thing.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's the contagiousness and the speed. Cannot emphasize that enough.
You can't put people in desperate situations. And that is what's going on right now. People are being put in desperate situations, so they're reacting in irrational ways, which plays right into the hands of people that just want to maintain control. And it's a tragedy to see people fall for that. So we need to stick together, I guess. And we will get through this. We will get through this if we care about one another. All right, with that said, let's turn on the old projector here. All right. And it's time for our sustaining feature, films from the year that was.
You put a new bulb in that thing. Wow.
I did, but I don't think it's the right kind.
All right. I see a little heat or like... It's not smoke. It looks like it's just warming up. Maybe some dust or something got in there.
I said the feature wrong, too. It's films of the year that was, not films from the year that was.
Yeah, we're on 73, right?
That's a different feature.
No, we're 72?
Well, actually, we are at 1973, I believe.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I have it right here.
But here's the thing. With all this COVID-19 nonsense, deliveries are taking much longer than normal. So that something that would take 2 days is now taking 2.5 weeks. So we don't yet have the domestic film from 1973. However, we were able to access the foreign winner of the Academy Awards for 1973. That's what we're doing, by the way. We're going through the Academy Awards year by year and reviewing each film that we see. Okay, so this film was available online. It was hugely expensive to get it on DVD.
Oh my gosh.
It was ridiculous. So, and plus, it would take forever. But what we opted to do instead was get it online. But here's the thing. We ran into a little bit of trouble.
So crazy.
It took us a couple of days to see this film. The reason being that for some reason, on I can say the services because we didn't use them, Amazon Prime, the film was there, but it said because of an agreement with our provider, we are not offering this film. What kind of agreement is that? They have it there, but because they agreed with some entity someplace, they're going to keep it from being looked at by anybody. It didn't make any sense.
It sounds like media consolidation.
It's terrible.
Straight up consolidation. It's some studio that is a parent company of something, and they don't want it over some distribution network.
But who benefits from that? I can't for the life of me understand who benefits
from that.
Certainly
not the consumer.
So anyway, I saw that it was available on iTunes. But, you know, I'm not a Mac person. I don't know how to interface iTunes with our big screen. And we don't have a Mac, so that's not going to work. So I was looking at ways that you can basically buy something on iTunes and then watch it on a Roku on a big screen. And I found some conversations back and forth that people want to do exactly that. And they were being warned by Mac people that that's illegal. You cannot take something that you bought on iTunes and make a different version of it and play it somewhere else. Oh, no, that cannot. Even though you paid for it, it's illegal. I mean, just the mentality here. So that was out. I just walked away from that. Then I found another service called Vudu. I'd never heard of this one before, Vudu. And it happens to be on our Roku.
Yeah.
So we actually went to Vudu. It's like, hey, wow, how about that? We found the film. It was on Vudu. Except it was just the trailer. For some reason, that was the only film you couldn't buy. It didn't make any sense. So we could watch the trailer, but we couldn't watch anything else. What's the point in that?
Yeah, I mean, as if we hadn't gone through enough trouble by using that platform, even being willing to pay on that platform, that's a lot of hoops to have been through, and then to realize that, oh, this isn't available just because.
So, you know, at that point, we had gone through all this effort to try and buy the thing. We looked everywhere. No place we could buy it. No place.
So we were out of options?
We're never out of options.
Is there a more reliable way than...
We had to go to the dark web and...
All the...
And elicit our dark friends in the pirate world to help us out here and find a copy. Inside of 2 minutes, they found the copy of the film. No problem at all. Again, I wanted to buy it. I was trying to buy it. I'm not going to pay $150 for a DVD because this film is somewhat rare. Sorry, that's not going to happen. But I, you know, will spend a fair amount for either a physical copy or watching it online. But to be blocked because of where I am or who I am or whatever, it's just it's silly. So okay, we got the film and we downloaded it. Took a long time, but we were able to get it. It's over 2 gigs. And then I guess I should have copied it to a flash drive directly, although that didn't actually work either. I copied it to a hard drive and then to a flash drive. And then when it was copying to the flash drive, for some reason, it took longer to copy to that than it did to copy over the internet. It got to the point where it said 5 seconds remaining and it stayed there for an hour and it just never went past that. And I looked that up and apparently that's a thing in Windows that copying large files sometimes gets stuck with 5 seconds remaining. So, okay, that didn't work. So we tried all kinds of other ways of copying to different thumb drives. None of them worked.
I still have a stack of SD cards.
None of them worked. Yeah, we tried that too. Turned out that some of the thumb drives we tried to use were formatted in FAT32, and apparently 2 gigs is a limit for those. So that didn't. It just said, sorry, can't copy this. And for the ones that were NTFS, they just wouldn't finish copying. So we finally had to copy to a network drive and get that to feed to the Roku. But that involved all kinds of reconfiguring of networks to see certain drives and things like that. So we were on about the third day now. By this time, you know, I feel we deserve credit in the film because we put in as much time as people who worked on it.
By the way, we switched from Roku at that point.
Did we? That's right, we did.
Yeah, we gave up on Roku. We watched it on another Kodi platform called Kodi.
Kodi, yeah.
Which is, it's another cool...
Roku, Kodi, Voodoo. Oh my God, what world is this?
Yeah, it runs a little piece of hardware that runs on a Raspberry Pi. And... yeah, we've experimented with all of them because there's so many different crazy platforms, and that happened to... It plays formats that sometimes the other device doesn't, and that's fairly common with some of the digital media players. But anyway, worked really well.
Did it? Do we have another complication with subtitles or something? Or
I think that was the TV's OS.
Okay, all right.
Did or did not have captions on, but eventually we were able to view this film, but... wow, that was so easy.
And the film sucked, too, in the end.
It was terrible.
What's it called? It's Day for Night?
Day for Night, which is a reference to shooting daytime scenes.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to say it sucked. It's a François Truffaut film, and he's in it. You know, he plays a director in it. So it's good to see him.
There was some surreal dream stuff and the director toiling. It reminded me of some of the other films we'd seen.
It's a film about making a film. And sometimes you're in the mood for that, and sometimes that just annoys you.
It gave me a headache.
Yeah, because there's too much, you know, referencing of itself. And actually, there was someone else in the film making a documentary about the film that the film was portraying. So you had a film within a film within a film. Okay, it's cute, but my God already.
Some meta BS, if you ask me.
And plus, you know, it's rapid-fire dialogue.
Really fast stuff, yeah.
Yeah, imagine having to watch Avenue 5 with subtitles. You couldn't possibly do that.
Okay, I'll relent and blame myself a little bit because I'm not... my ear's good. I can speak a little French, but hearing it, my ear isn't so good. My vocabulary is weak. So having to read all of those captions really takes away from the visual medium itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so much is communicated by the scene, by costume, by form, shape, color, all the you know, shading, shadows, contrast, all those elements of the visual part of a film. You end up going back and forth and you can miss things. You can slight gestures, as we talked about in the previous movie in The Godfather, make it very difficult. So perhaps if I was a native speaker and I did not need captions of any kind, I would just hear and interpret the film in a much more engrossing way and be maybe slightly more interested in it.
It was basically about, herding actresses and actors together to do certain scenes. There were some funny bits where people were constantly getting things wrong. Or having nervous breakdowns or having affairs with each other.
A lot of clapboards and studio equipment.
And it's interesting to watch the whole process, you know, seeing a scene being shot over and over again. I was kind of interested in that, but it was a lot of work. And not just the work in getting us to view it in the first place, but it's a lot of work to get through, to figure out everything. I would say if I didn't dislike the film, that seeing it again would probably be a benefit to us because we'd understand it better.
I don't have time for that.
But I don't really care about these people so much. It is interesting to see Francois Truffaut.
Former diva, young heartthrob, British actress.
That heartthrob, the male actor who played the childish actor that kept getting into tantrums.
Alphonse.
Yeah, he was actually in another Francois Truffaut film called, what was it, The 400 Blows? The 300 Blows? I forget how many blows there were, but there were a lot of blows, and he played a kid in that, and it was a really, really good film. So he's a good actor. And it's worth seeing. Well, if you've ever seen that film, that's
a
lot.
Is that previously, or is that
That's previously.
Up? Okay.
Well, because so he was a kid then, so obviously that's previously.
Yeah, okay, decades later.
So that's an excellent film to see. I've seen that in the past. So,
yeah, recovering from a nervous breakdown.
For some reason, that didn't win the Academy Award.
Controversially leading to her marriage with her much older daughter. Several vignettes chronicling stories. Yeah, I mean, just read the Wikipedia page is short because Wikipedia probably doesn't want to explain it.
Well, it's a hard film to see in many ways, but we saw it and we're better for it. But that's going to do it for us.
So glad it was.
Hopefully, our domestic film from 1973 arrives by next week, so we can talk about that.
Filmmaking is hard. Production's hard.
Film watching is hard.
Film viewing, yes, absolutely. It takes concentration, especially when you're reading, because you can't hear the language.
It doesn't have to be so hard, though. Well, I mean, this part, watching the foreign film, yeah, that was difficult, but it shouldn't be so hard to obtain it. So I don't know what's going on with the digital platforms, but they need to get their act together.
Do libraries have streaming services?
That's a good question.
That would be really cool if you could just have your library card. Maybe...
You mean go to the library and watch it, or would you
watch it at
home?
No. Have your account with a library.
Uh-huh.
Maybe in academic libraries this works. But I could totally see a public library. You have an account. You pay like a very minimal fee on top of your account, or maybe nothing at all, or maybe it's subsidized somehow, but... One way or the other, your account allows you to search for the same things that you would have rented from the library on VHS or DVDs, whatever, however old you are, whatever format. But now, I mean, why not have streaming video through your local library?
There are so many things we can be experimenting with right now. I'm seeing digital film festivals. Stony Brook's having one, in fact.
A lot,
And I have to figure out how to get involved in that because it's... You know, we all have access, or most of us have access to the digital things we need to see these works of art. So how can we do that? How can we be a part of it and also support it? I think there's nothing that we can't continue to participate in if we use our imagination a little bit. So that's what I think a lot of people are doing right now. And I hope to see more of that as we continue to plod through these challenging times. We just have a couple of minutes left. I just wanted to, have you been following this South Dakota thing, which I think is fascinating? Turns out that the Sioux tribe, the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe and the Oglala Sioux tribe basically have been taking precautions to stay safe. Yeah, by having checkpoints in places that on roads that go through their land. And the governor is trying to stop them from doing this. The Republican governor never enacted a stay-at-home order in her state, despite a huge outbreak at a Sioux Falls meatpacking plant. She threatened to sue the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe and the Oglala Sioux tribe, arguing that their efforts to prevent the spread of the virus through roadway checkpoints was interfering with traffic. The ultimate crime. She ordered the tribes to dismantle them within 48 hours, a deadline that has now passed. And on Monday, yesterday, the president of the Oglala Sioux tribe said in a news release that he will not remove checkpoints on roads within the reservation meant to stop transmission of COVID-19 into the Pine Ridge Reservation. Since she won't protect tribal health and safety, tribes have no choice but to take matters into their own hands. This is inspiring. This is exactly the kind of thing people should be doing. And I have full support for their efforts against ignorance. That governor did not even take the minimal steps to prevent the spread. And citizens of that tribe are doing just that.
Yeah, and you say the Sioux, for people that aren't familiar, that is probably one of the largest tribal nations in this country, This mm-hmm. is not no small thing. That's a large territory, and they have a lot of people to look out for there and have every right to use the roadways to do some kind of screening if, of course, they're not getting the resources and help that they need. They may come up with their own ways to manage their territory, and it is vast.
It is, and it's their land, and they get to have the final say here. So let's see what happens, and more people need to stand up for their rights like that. Very inspirational. Hey, we're out of time. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We want to hear what you have to say. We can't take phone calls because we can't handle delay from here, but we can read letters and hear from you that way. We do want to know what you're doing to get through this and suggestions for us. And please keep listening to WUSB because, wow, we have such good programming on our station. So many people really... I think doing the best shows they've ever done and sharing with the listeners. It's nothing like having a hometown station that that just tells you what's going on locally, but it's applicable to everywhere in the world. So please keep listening.
Support community radio. And
absolutely.
We'll keep coming to you from down the road as long as we have to. And then when we get back, we'll be happy to be there.
And remember, we're all in this together. We're all fighting loneliness. Hey, listen to the lyrics from this guy, Harry Chapin. Long Islander left us way too soon. We'll talk to you next time. Good night.
All I got is time. Nothing else is mine. All I want is you and one more tomorrow. Nothing lasts too long. When I leave, it's gone. So I send my mind ahead and hope to follow. Yes, I know I have a lifetime coming, but I've got it all figured out. Everybody's lonely. Everybody's lonely. Everybody's lonely. That's what it's all about. I've had my share of heartaches, misfortune and mistakes. Occasionally this life has left me battered, but I can't blame no one else. 'Cause what I've done to myself is the only kind of history that matters. Yes, I know I have a lifetime coming, but I've got it all figured out. Everybody's lonely. Everybody's lonely. Everybody's lonely. That's what it's all about. Drift away, but maybe you will stay this time. I wonder. Yes, I know I have a lifetime coming, but I've got it all figured out. heart is lonely. Everybody's lonely. Everybody's lonely. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about.
You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Step outside, celebrate for a minute.
This is Robert Klein speaking to you from WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. Get me out of here!